This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon. This is Eben Fowler from Bot Radio Network sitting in for Tony Perkins today. I get to do this every once in a while. It's a lot of fun, and it's great having you listening today. We've got a power-packed program for you today, some pretty interesting topics. We'll start out with, first of all, we've got 1 week remaining of the August recess before members of Congress return to D.C. We'll talk with Texas Congressman Louis Gohmert about what members of Congress face when they get back from the playground. You know, recess, you get it? Well, once upon a time, corporate America used to be concerned about their branding, but have they given up on their public image in exchange for political agendas? We'll have the pleasure of talking with Wall Street Journal columnist and best-selling author Kimberly Strassel. She's written a compelling column. It was in this morning's journal, and she'll be here to talk about that. It has something to do with this nasty little organization called the Southern Poverty Law Center, SPLC. If you remember, a few years back, I believe in August, it's been just a little, we just passed the anniversary, if you will, of a shooting that took place in the lobby of the Family Research Council headquarters in Washington, D.C. The nut who perpetrated that shooting and who intended to kill a number of employees at Family Research Council was motivated in part by a report that he read on the Southern Poverty Law Center's website. They have this little hate list that they put together. It's a hate watch thing. You know, the Family Research Council, you know, I've met a lot of people who work there. I've been there several times. I've never met anybody on that staff who hates anybody. So I'm not quite sure I understand what's going on with the SPLC, but they label us hate groups, anybody who disagrees with their point of view. That's essentially what it boils down to. And that's what Kimberly's article was about today in the Wall Street Journal. We'll be talking with her about that, and I'm going to ask her real nice-like if she will hold over past the bottom of the hour into our third segment and we'll kind of see where we're going with that conversation on the first topic. And if we have time, we'll be talking about another article that she wrote about how folks are going after employees of the Environmental Protection Agency. If you work for Donald Trump's EPA, I guess that makes you a target of environmentalist watch lists. So there's another watch list, by golly. And then in California, in our last segment, tragically, sad liberal agendas happening in a Rockland, California school. The open celebration of a kindergartner transitioning from a boy to a girl. Where have we gone? What's going on here? Well, we'll talk with Jonathan Keller. He's the CEO of the California Family Council about how we got here and other pending legislation that will shock you. And then, of course, we'll be taking your calls. We'll probably be talking about that particular topic when we take phone calls, assuming that we've got the time. Well, let me just take a minute here to talk about something that's really important that's going on right now, and it has to do with Hurricane Harvey. Let me just read an AP story that just popped up here. With time running out, tens of thousands of people fled from the path of Hurricane Harvey Friday as it picked up strength and took aim at a wide swath of the Texas Gulf Coast that includes oil refineries, chemical plants, and dangerously flood-prone Houston, the nation's fourth largest city. Texas Governor Greg Abbott warned that the monster system would be a very major disaster, and the menacing forecasts drew fearful comparisons to Hurricane Katrina, one of the nation's deadliest. We know that we've got millions of people who are going to feel the impact of this storm, said Dennis Feltgen, a spokesman and meteorologist for the National Hurricane Center. So, you know, there are a lot of us who are just listening right now who are in other parts of the country, and we may be somewhat peripherally impacted because a lot of times when these hurricanes hit, you know, the Gulf Coast or the Texas coast, it generates other weather systems that kind of spin off and we get rain and that sort of thing. But nothing like the people who are in the path of that hurricane are likely to get. So I just want to encourage each of you to pray Maybe take a moment. In fact, let's just do that. Let's just take a minute right now to pray for the people who are in the path of the storm. And just join me here for a moment. Lord, we ask that you would have mercy on the people who are likely to be affected by this storm. And we ask that you would have mercy on them. We pray that you'd give them wisdom as they leave and help those people who need to leave where they are to do so. And we just ask for your protection. In Christ's name, amen. So I would just, again, encourage you to, in your own way, take some time and pray for those people. It sounds like it's going to have major impact. Maybe it'll back off just a little bit and it won't be quite as bad as what they're predicting. We can certainly hope that's the case. Well, each year, Congress recesses for the month of August. Members of Congress return to their districts and meet with their constituents. Congress faces a daunting agenda when it returns after the Labor Day weekend. With us now to discuss the challenges and opportunities ahead, our friend Congressman Louis Gohmert. He's been on the broadcast a number of times and also has guest hosted. He sat in this chair, as a matter of fact. He represents the 1st Congressional District of Texas. He's a member of the House Freedom Caucus, House Judiciary Committee, and Natural Resources Committee. And first of all, we'll talk about what's going to happen after the recess, Louis, but I don't know if you heard, I was talking about this hurricane that's about ready to hit your state.
Sure, of course.
Give us an update. I'm sure you've been watching that. What's going on right now?
Well, that's the one thing good about the Internet is people can keep up like never before. So everybody can be in touch all of the time. This is hitting the Texas coast further south. And, of course, even when it hits on the coast and you're 200, 300 miles away, as we saw with Hurricane Katrina and Isaac, Rita, it still can kill people. Way inland because of those rains that come, and you get a 6-inch rain all of a sudden way up in Texas, even away from the coast where you think you're safe, and then you try to cut across 6 inches of water, and as I understand it, half of the drownings in a hurricane occur in cars. So thank you for the prayer for those that are in harm's way and are going to be in harm's way. And I certainly hope they use the wisdom not to try to overcome nature because, as my dad used to say, he was an architect, nothing is more powerful than water on the move. Nothing. It can move a building. It can move a pylon. It can move anything. So hopefully people will take that to heart and those that were immediately in harm's way were hoping and praying they took the hint to go ahead and move to safer places. One of the things that arose out of Hurricane Katrina, people think about Louisiana, but it was followed quickly by Rita, and all of the interior rain followed quickly by Rita ended up just devastating my district that is hour and a half north of the Texas coast. And of course, we know the main flooding in Louisiana came when the levee broke, but the flooding in East Texas was from the rain. And one of the good things we did was encourage the building of civic centers that the communities would pay for, and they would be in charge of maintaining them through the years. But as soon as there was a storm that came, that civic center had to be a place for refugees. And one of the requirements, it had to be able to withstand a 200-mile-an-hour wind. So as a result of the disaster that occurred after Katrina and Rita, we now have a lot of places for refugees to go when they're fleeing for safety. So those are some good things if people will just take the hint and go ahead and take advantage of what's there.
That's great. That's great. Well, let's turn our attention to post-recess time. What are the top three issues that you think Congress is going to be dealing with, and which way do you think each of those are going to go?
Well, we've got to deal with, number one, the spending for fiscal year 2018 that begins on October 1st. And we have got to deal with the debt ceiling. And I would say there are four, because number three is tax reform that we promised along with the president all of last year. And the fourth is we cannot walk away from repeal and replace Obamacare. People, I've been talking to them all over East Texas. They are hurting. They don't see how they're going to make another year with premiums as high as they are. They have got to have relief. But let me tell you, back before the end of June, the Freedom Caucus and Mark Meadows is doing a great job. Jim Jordan, the former chair, making clear, I guess we all agreed on the Freedom Caucus, look, we know we don't normally vote for appropriations bills because it's just too much spending, but if you will bring the 12 appropriations bills to the floor and bring a debt ceiling with it where we can put something in where we will be saving some money next year, and we'll have a mechanism in place to do that with the debt ceiling increase, we will join with the party. We will be right there with you. But don't do a partial. We have 12 appropriations bills every year that have to be passed. Don't do a partial hold back something critical like Homeland Security and then expect us at midnight to vote for a debt ceiling increase.
Let me ask you.
That looks like what's what they're doing. They didn't bring all 12 to the floor in July. They held back 8 important ones, and now it looks like they're going to try to ram a debt ceiling increase through at the last minute.
Well, Louie, let me ask you about the elephant in the room. When you're talking about debt ceiling and even the word debt, what are we doing about this $19 trillion of debt that we're looking at? And I guess it's probably getting closer to 20, much of which was racked up during the Obama years.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And we probably are at about $20 trillion. And the sad thing is, though Republicans have a majority in the House and Senate, now have the White House, the feeling is among the Republican leaders, look, let's just give the Democrats what they want, and the president, like a so-called clean debt ceiling increase, just raise the debt. This is our big chance to put something in place that will rein in spending so that we can start taking the debt the other way. You're right to bring it up. Most Republicans ran on that issue, and actually Democrats got the majority in 2006 saying they would start decreasing the debt to the debt limit, but they went the other direction, actually.
Yeah, it's
unfortunately, the answer in short is nothing.
Yeah, well, that's unfortunate.
The Freedom Caucus was saying, this is our chance. Let's put something in place that will rein in spending, and we'll send the debt going the other way, and we'll vote with you on the appropriation, with you on the debt ceiling, but give us a mechanism that's going to, for certain, decrease spending. And
Representative Gohmert, we've got a hard break coming up. Thanks for coming on the program today. We appreciate it. We'll be back talking with Kimberly Strassel here on Washington.
Every day, Americans put their trust in doctors who have sworn the Hippocratic Oath to do no harm. We expect that the care they give us will honor this oath to the best of their ability. So why would a doctor participate in physician-assisted suicide? It directly contradicts this oath, leaving our people vulnerable to medical practices that lack safety and integrity. Earlier this year, Washington, D.C. joined Washington State, Vermont, Oregon, California, Colorado, and Montana in legalizing physician-assisted suicide. As a physician of over 25 years and a strong supporter of patient rights and access to quality care, U.S. Representative Brad Winstrup has led the charge in Congress to repeal the D.C. law and ensure safeguards are put in place that protect our nation's most vulnerable citizens. To learn more about what Congress is doing on this issue, go to frc.org/speakers. Again, that is frc.org/speakers.
In America today, religious freedom, national borders, and even traditional gender roles are in peril. With all that's happening in our world, our nation is in desperate need of a return to conservative values. Hello, I'm Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of American Family Association. One of the best ways we can make a difference is with our vote. That's why each year the American Family Association is a sponsor of the Values Voters Summit to help increase cultural engagement. This year's Values Voters Summit will be October 13th through the 15th in Washington, D.C. The growing list of confirmed speakers includes people you hear on AFR like Ed Battagliano and Tawny Perkins, as well as Michelle Bachman, George Barna, Gary Bauer, the Benham Brothers, and more. The Values Voters Summit is sponsored in part by AFA Action. To learn more and to register, you can visit valuesvotersummit.org.
Oops, there's a piece I missed a little bit.
Grandpa, why do we always pick up litter when we go hiking?
Well, we're just making it nicer for people who come after us a little bit. It's called stewardship.
My grandfather taught me that you should always leave a place better than you found it. That it's important to invest in the lives of your children and grandchildren, leaving them with a godly legacy they can build on. That's why I decided to set up a charitable gift annuity with the AFA Foundation.
It's called stewardship.
I know that my gift will support a ministry that honors the biblical principles I hold dear, and it's a way to invest in the future of our country. The AFA Foundation also arranged for me to have a steady fixed income, so I don't have to worry in the midst of changing times.
Call the AFA Foundation today to find out how you can set up a charitable gift annuity. Just call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Evan Fowler with Bot Radio Network sitting in today for Tony Perkins, and glad to be doing it and glad to have you along listening today. Well, it's no surprise that corporate America is concerned about its branding and its public image, but lately, it seems, many companies have clearly and willingly shown their liberal stripes. Joining us now is Kimberly Strassel. She's the best-selling author of The Imitation Game. She's a journalist and member of the Wall Street Journal editorial board, and I'll just say I love her work. It's fantastic. She's a great writer, and whenever she's got something in the journal, I read it. She writes a weekly conservative column called Potomac Watch, which appears on Fridays. So I was sitting eating my cereal this morning, reading my Wall Street Journal. I had it in front of me and flipped over to the editorial page, which is usually where I start. And there was Kimberly's article. And I read it and I thought, boy, this is great. And then I talked with our producer later today before we put this program together. And he said, how would you like to talk to Kimberly Strassel about her article in the paper this morning? I said, you betcha. So, Kimberly, welcome to Washington Watch.
It is so great to be here, and what a kind introduction. Thank you.
Well, I meant every word of it, so it's great to have you aboard. You know, I was in the front end of the broadcast, I was telling our listeners a little bit about the history of what happened at the Family Research Council back in August of 2012, when a nutcase walked through the front door with a loaded 9mm pistol and a couple of magazines and about 50 rounds of ammunition and a bag of Chick-fil-A sandwiches, intent on going and shooting staff members at the Family Research Council headquarters. But thanks to a brave gentleman who was the security guard at that time, an unarmed security guard, not that way anymore, he stopped. He was shot in the arm, and he stopped this kook. But one of the things that was determined after this incident happened was that this individual went on, was on a reading list or went on the website of the Southern Poverty Law Center, the SPLC, and that in part inspired him to go and do this horrendous act at the Family Research Council headquarters. So SPLC is on my bad list and will continue to be so. But tell us about this article. Tell us, give us some background, and then delve into the content of the article, I'm sure, which many of our listeners perhaps haven't had a chance to read, Kimberly.
Sure. Well, SPLC should be on a lot of people's bad list, because what this outfit is an organization that purports to track hate groups in the country. And, you know, to its credit, it does have some KKK groups and neo-Nazi groups on its list. It maintains a map of more than 900, quote, hate groups. But what it really is the liberal outfit that kind of uses that as a cover to look good to the press. And then what it really does is go around and designate all of its ideological opponents as hate groups. So Christian organizations that might oppose gay marriage, it has listed as hate groups. It has the Family Research Council listed as hate groups. And the article was trying to point out that in the wake of the tragedy in Charlottesville, some corporations didn't feel it was enough to simply disavow Mr. Trump or resign from his business councils. They wanted to look as though they were doing something proactive. And unfortunately, at least two major names, Apple Corporation, as well as J.P. Morgan Chase, chose to give anywhere from $500,000 to $1 million to none other than the SPLC. They claim it was to help them with their efforts to track, hate groups, but seem either to not have known or not cared that, in fact, this organization targets completely mainstream groups that are simply exercising their free speech rights.
Yeah, that's right. And as a matter of fact, I took a peek at their website today, and I had been informed of this by one of our other staff members. But guess whose name showed up on that list? My name as a guest host of Washington Watch, because they have this little thing called the FRC Radio Roundup as part of their little hate watch list. And so this program, in fact, your name will show up on the list as well, so you can go look for it. It's lots of fun. But, you know, this has become dangerous. So, Apple and J.P. Morgan and whoever else that's sending money to these people are potentially putting people's lives in danger. Is that maybe a little on the outside edge, or am I about right on that?
No, it's not on the outside edge, because not only does this group name groups, but it, as you just said, names individuals, and it writes half-truths about them. It writes in very incendiary language. It's exactly the sort of thing that would inspire the kooks of the world or those that are simply very militant in their ideology to potentially go out and attack someone. We know that happened. You told the incident of what happened to the Family Research Council. We know that the man who came and shot up Republican congressmen who were practicing for baseball had liked the Southern Poverty website or a Facebook page, so he was certainly aware of the center and what it had said about different conservatives. You know, one of the people that I talked about in the article is a woman named Ayan Hirsi Ali. This is a woman who was a refugee from Somalia. She has become a very eloquent and outspoken advocate of talking about the problems of Sharia law and Islamic extremism. When she was still in Europe, she worked with this controversial filmmaker, Theo van Gogh, who ended up being assassinated on the street by a Muslim fanatic. She was working with him at the time. The fanatic pinned a note on his victim saying that she was next. She has never left her house since without an armed guard, and yet the Southern Poverty Law Center has her name as an extremist, an anti-Muslim extremist, her name, pictures. And so, again, are further turning her into a target for somebody to go and assassinate. And the idea to me that legitimate and respectable corporations in this country would in any way legitimize an organization that engages in such tactics is truly appalling. It's beyond the pale.
Yeah. Well, and we're going to be back here in just a minute. We've got a hard break coming up, Kimberly, but would you stay over with us because there's so much more to talk about, and there's also an article about the EPA that you wrote, and there may be some other stuff that we get to. Would you be able to do that?
You bet.
All right, fantastic. Well, and then I'd also mention that notorious figures like David Barton and notorious organizations like Alliance Defending Freedom also show up on the SPLC's list of people that hate, and they don't. They really don't at all. And I'm kind of thinking that this sort of thing keeps going on. There might be some legal action that one could take against the Southern Poverty Law Center for their irresponsible and foolish posting of this kind of information and whipping people. There are a lot of people out there who are unstable, quite frankly, and we don't really need help with that sort of thing. So anyway, coming up after the break, we'll be talking with Kimberly again, and we hope you'll stay with us on Washington Watch.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Well, finally, we get to hear Janet Yellen and Mario Draghi, two central bankers speaking, and apparently a lot of the markets, both here and the markets throughout the Eurozone, are very concerned about this and watching it very closely. But I think it's kind of silly that they could even be watching this, expecting some sort of monetary policy that is going to be significant in any way, that is going to be revealed, and everybody is either going to worry or feel really good. I don't expect that we are going to see any kind of real significant change in any of the thinking or the monetary policy from either one of those. One thing that is interesting that we've discovered this week, that all of the Eurozone is actually growing at a faster pace than the U.S. Amazing. And I would expect that might have somebody like a Donald Trump, President Trump, riled up. But I believe that their jumpstart in the Eurozone to their growth came from America. Well, oil prices are climbing as we see a little bit of a danger zone in this hurricane. The hurricane is en route, or certainly going to impact, one of the largest refineries in the world, Valero, Chevron, and a couple of others in Port Arthur, Texas. This is a cause for some concern because just a couple of weeks ago, one of the levees was breached there in that area, and it's only sandbagged up. So this could have an impact on oil prices, certainly, towards the first part and the end of next week.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
You're listening to Washington Watch. Evan Fowler with Bot Radio Network sitting in for Tony Perkins this afternoon and having a great time doing it. Kimberly Strassel is our guest currently. She is a best-selling author and the Wall Street Journal columnist extraordinaire. And we're talking about, we were before the break, talking about her column about the Southern Poverty Law Center and some of the big-time corporations that are sending money their way. Kimberly, is there anything else you want to say about that piece before we move on to another topic?
Well, only this, that the corporations that gave the money, and again, it was Apple and J.P. Morgan Chase, they felt the need, I think, to do this because, they were very clear in their statement that they wanted to give money to organizations that they believed would help identify or stop hate groups and heal the country. And my argument is that that is precisely the wrong way to do it. You give money to the Southern Poverty Law Center and you are inspiring more anger because that's what this organization exists to do.
Right.
And you are potentially pushing out the moderate voices by allowing that organization to tag people as extremists who are not. You are essentially helping them to blackball the in fact, moderate and compassionate voices that are needed out there to help heal some of the divisions in our society.
You're essentially almost making them equivalent, aren't you?
Well, you are, and not only that, but you are serving to make the true hate groups out there, the true, you know, racially motivated neo-Nazi skinhead Klansmen groups seem innocuous because they're being compared, again, to mainstream organizations and therefore are not getting the attention they truly deserve.
I want to ask you, speaking about that, you know, in the wake of Charlottesville, as you well know, President Trump came out on that Saturday and made a comment that just sent the media into it. It made all of their heads were exploding across the country. Personally, I thought that first comment was quite appropriate. And then, of course, he came out and clarified or added more nuance to it and specifically called out particular groups, neo-Nazis, white supremacists, et cetera. Briefly, your thoughts on, first of all, on what the president said and how he handled that, as well as the media reaction to it.
Well, I look at it in two ways, because as a political writer, it's my job to. I look at it in terms of reality, what he said in those first comments, saying that there is hate on both sides is absolutely true. We cannot forget even just the past 2 years of riots in Baltimore, of cop shootings, of whatever, the protests in Portland, Oregon, everywhere where there was a lot of violence and perpetrated by the left. And now we've seen it from the right and both sides in Charlottesville. So from a matter of substance, it was correct. Politically, which is also my job to look at, what I do wish is that the president had simply come out, condemned those that had come to Charlottesville with the purpose of inciting violence. And there were many neo-Nazi groups there. I wish he'd have said something about that and let it be. And here's why. Because, first of all, he's got a lot on his plate going forward, a big agenda, and he needs to be focused on that. And his handling of this has allowed the press, which is out to get him, to drag this issue on and waste another week. And secondly, I just also think, and it's unfortunate that this is the case, but Republican presidents are held to different standards on the race question. And so when faced with it, I just think it's in their better interest to be very clear and concise and no nonsense so that you don't give the media that opportunity that they always want to take.
Wise counsel. Hopefully he'll hear that, because I think you're right. Well, we have a couple of minutes left, Kimberly. I want to give you an opportunity to talk about the article that you wrote yesterday about green groups attacking staffers merely for working in Trump's government. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to read that. So give me and our listeners a little bit of in about a minute and a half, your thoughts on that topic.
Yeah, I'll make it quick. You know, traditionally, it's always been the case, and we both know this, that, you know, if you're an elected or an appointed official in an administration, that, you know, you're fair game. The other side is going to come after you. But government is also made up of hundreds upon hundreds of lower-level appointees. They might be appointed politically, but they just come in. They're not out there in the public. They're doing their job. They're experts in what they do. And we now have a group of left-wing environmental groups that are purposely calling them out, putting their names on websites, attacking them, harassing them, subjecting them to freedom of information requests, and all designed, which they've been open about trying to drive them, pay a penalty if you work for Donald Trump.
Yeah, and for example, tell us about the example that you stated in your article.
Yeah, so we had I profiled Samantha Dravis, who is a wonderful woman, a talented attorney. She used to work for the Republican Attorney General's Association as a lawyer. She came over with Scott Pruitt at the EPA. She's in essence in charge of just reviewing all the regulations that are there to see which ones might stay, might go, could be made better. You know, this was an exercise the Obama administration went through, too. But she has been isolated out, singled out, accused of all kinds of things for which there's no proof. Her name put on websites, subject, again, to all these harassing information requests just because she's working for Donald Trump.
Yeah, just amazing. Well, Kimberly, as I said kind of in the introduction, appreciate the work that you do. Please keep doing the work. Keep telling the truth. And tell your folks there at the Wall Street Journal that you've got a lot of folks that appreciate what you do.
Well, I appreciate you too. Thank you.
All right. Well, coming up next, yesterday we told you about the outrageous story of a kindergarten, quote, and I put this in quotes, transgender student in a California school. When we return, Jonathan Keller, who is the CEO of the California Family Council, we'll share how we got here legislatively and where we're heading. Headed, we'll also, let me give you the phone number here before we go to the break so you can be getting your fingers ready to dial 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Glad to have you along listening to Washington Watch. This is Evan Fowler with Bot Radio Network sitting in for Tony Perkins. Be right back.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. One of the places we visit on one of the days on our tour of Israel is the Shepherd's Fields. Now, this is a place in Bethlehem. You can look out on any given day and see shepherds with their sheep, as if it were 2,000 years ago during the birth of Christ. So that's a very special place that we visit. Yeah, the terrain would be the same. You can just picture yourself being there the night the angels sang about the glory of the coming of the Lord. That's just one of the places we visit on one of the days. So if you would like to join us on our March 8th through the 16th tour of Israel, we'd love to have you. Just go to the website, twholyland.com, for more information. twholyland.com. Or for a free brochure sent to you in the mail, call us at 800-FAMILIES. That's 1-800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, option 5.
Many in America seem to have forgotten that its foundation was built on God. In this 40th year celebration of the American Family Association, we invite you to help us remind America once again of the truth behind our national motto, In God We Trust. You can do your part and display your faith with an In God We Trust car decal from the AFA store. Order yours today with free shipping at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Hello friends, Michael Youssef here from Leading the Way. God has used the American Family Association in many incredible ways, and I am so thankful for their impact on this nation. Through the mission and the efforts of AFA, Christians have been given the tools that they need to stand firm for the truth. And I just want to say congratulations to the entire team as they celebrate 40 years of faithful ministry.
Here for your encouragement and your walk with God. This is David Wolin with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. If you knew someone was planning to break into your home, what would you do today? I know I'd probably call the police, invest in a good alarm system, maybe get a dog. And even then, I'd wonder if I was really safe. But according to Jesus, the devil, the thief, does have his eye set on my life and your life. Jesus said, "The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy." But here's the good news. In the same verse, Jesus says, "I have come that they may have life and have it to the full." You see, the devil cannot steal what belongs to Jesus. And if you belong to him, not only are you safe, you have the very life of Christ in you. You can get Anchor Devotional delivered in print at getanchor.com.
Well, we're coming around the bend here on Washington Watch, final segment for the week, and we're glad you're listening. Evan Fowler, I'm sitting in here for Tony Perkins. I'm with Bot Radio Network, and I'm glad to be here with you. Well, as we discussed yesterday, if you happen to be listening, concerned parents flooded a school board meeting Monday after a kindergarten teacher introduced her students to transgenderism. Well, isn't kindergarten where you're supposed to do that? Good grief. Got to start them early. Well, she did it, and she did it without parental notice. I wonder why. Well, now another parent at the same school is outraged her child was sent to the principal's office for, quote, misgendering a male classmate who now identifies as a girl. We have gone absolutely nuts, have we not? Well, let me give you a little background in case you weren't listening yesterday. And by the way, you can go back and listen to yesterday's program and others if you go to frc.org/radio. Our archives there. You can also subscribe to the podcast like I do. But anyway, let's pick this up. That August 21st meeting was packed with parents struggling to comfort their scared and confused children. The teacher, who was not named, told students one of their classmates was a girl trapped in a boy's body, which to me sounds a bit like the invasion of the body snatchers, does it not? One concerned mother told CBS Sacramento, quote, "My daughter came home crying and shaking, so afraid she could turn into a boy." I don't blame her. But, you know, all seriousness aside, what are we doing to these kids? The impact that's having on those children. You know, it reminds me of a scripture that talks about hanging a millstone around the neck of people who do this kind of thing to children. And God's not kidding about that. So they best be aware that there's going to be an eternal consequence for this kind of foolishness. Let me go on here. The controversial incident occurred June 7th at Rockland Academy Gateway, a public charter school near Sacramento. A male kindergartner asked his teacher to read a book titled I Am Jazz to the class. Co-written by biologically male teen Jazz Jennings, the book describes how Jazz, quote, transitioned from a boy to a girl. After the teacher read the book to the class, the male student changed from his, quote, boy clothes into his girl clothes. The teacher then instructed students to use the boy's new girl name. Later, when one mother asked what happened, the teacher told her to ask your child. Rockland Academy Superintendent Robin Stout recently told parents details of what transpired in the June 7th class that they can't be shared with parents to protect student confidentiality and safety. Now, the school has reportedly threatened students with a trip to the principal's office if they fail to call the biologically male child by a female pronoun and name. I'm already totally confused. Well, anyway, with us now is Jonathan Keller, CEO of the California Family Council. Welcome to a confused Eben Fowler on Washington Watch.
Hi, Eben. Thanks for having me, and I apologize. The confusion is evident not just in this story, but across the state and nation. It's just trying to keep the pronouns straight, frankly, is baffling. I don't know how adults are supposed to keep track of this, much less 5- and 6-year-old children.
You know, I want to make it clear. I'm not trying to make fun of anybody here or pick on anybody here. In fact, I want you to help us out a little bit. There are some rare cases of gender dysphoria and confusion, and there's some biological things that go on. Separate that from all of this other stuff, if you would. Help us out with that first.
Well, absolutely. So first off, we do need to clarify, when we have been testifying at California Family Council in the legislature in Sacramento, one of the first things we warn people and we remind people is that as Christians, as followers of Christ, every single person in this country and around the world is created in the image of God.
That's
every
right.
Every single person, every person deserves dignity and respect, no matter what their sex attraction, whether they are struggling with gender dysphoria. Just like you said, Eben, no one should ever be mocked, no one should be bullied or harassed. But at the same time, it's very important that we don't try to solve something by actually making it worse. And sadly, I think that's what happened here. I don't think that this teacher necessarily is a bad person. I don't think she was trying to traumatize these students. But that was the effect of what happened when you have a child, a 5-year-old little boy, who has been known as a little boy, who has acted like a little boy, who has dressed like a little boy for the entire first year of his school life. For the entire first year of kindergarten, he dressed as a boy, presented as a boy. And on the second to the last day, the teacher and this little boy's parents decided that it was the right time for this gender reveal, where he went to school dressed as a boy, and some point during the day, after reading that book called I Am Jazz, the little boy went into the bathroom and came out dressed in a dress with little pink shoes, and now the teacher instructed those classmates to call this little biological male child a girl. And, you know, my wife and I are expecting our first child September 1st, and I'm just thinking of all my friends that have kids that are 4, 5, 6 years old, the level of confusion, the level of fear and trauma that would be associated with telling them, you are not the way God created you, but you could actually be a little boy trapped in a girl's body or a little girl trapped in a boy's body. I mean, Eben, the level of uncertainty, the level of fear and confusion that sows in an entire class, it's really disturbing, especially when it's coming from our public schools with no notice and no consent from parents.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you know, I assume you'll agree it's millstone time here for some of these adults, so-called adults, who are misleading children. And as you say, a 5-year-old is very pliable. You can convince them of all kinds of things. And books like that, I'm not familiar with this book, I Am Jazz, but I'm going to guess that it has a fairly clear agenda, and that agenda is to try to convince people to think this way, to think to make people think that or unsure of what they are or who they are. Tell us about what the content of that book is, if you're familiar with it.
Well, absolutely. The book, again, was co-written by a biologically male child, and sadly, in our country's, you know, reality TV-obsessed culture, TLC, which formerly, you know, had given some positive shows, they'd done some decent reality television in the past, But hopping on the transgender bandwagon, TLC had produced this television show called I Am Jazz and the book that came out of that, which tells the story of this young biological male, Jazz Jennings, who decided that he was going to transition from a male into a female. And his parents not only encouraged and supported that, but were willing to go so far as to put him forward on national television through this series as a model for other, quote-unquote, trans children to follow. And the book essentially tries to normalize the concept that you may not be the way God created you. You may not actually be male or female. You could be this thing called transgender. And you asked earlier about the whole concept of gender dysphoria. Well, up until just a few years ago, the whole concept of being considering yourself different than what your biology said was known in the psychological, psychiatric community as gender dysphoria. And it's only been because of the aggressive efforts of the LGBT movement in the last few years that they have aggressively worked to try to normalize and legitimize what used to be clearly defined and treated as a psychological disorder.
Right. And that's my understanding. I mean, the American Psychological Association has removed a number of things kind of down this line from their list of pathologies. And now what used to be considered pathological and not normal is, as you say, the attempt is to normalize it. Well, let me ask you about, since you're out there in the land of fruits and nuts, California, and, you know, some people will make an exception for that. There are a couple of bills, SB 179, and there's also something called Bill 219. Tell us about those and what you're doing about them.
Well, absolutely. I will say that we're very grateful to be partnered up with Family Research Council, with AFR, and a lot of national groups. Our good friends also at Alliance Defending Freedom and Focus on the Family. At California Family Council, we serve as the public policy organization for the state, representing the values of men and women of faith in the Capitol. And those two bills, like you said, are just another example of the transgender radical agenda that is attacking families and attacking not just gender, but it's really attacking the nature of reality. The first one you mentioned, SB 179, if it passes and is signed by Governor Brown later this year, we would become one of the first states in the nation to allow people to actually pick their gender on their driver's license. If you are a male or a female, you no longer have to identify that way on your driver's license. You can now choose your pronoun and gender of choice, and you can even choose to identify as something called non-binary. Instead of an M for male or an F for female, you would now have an X, which means you don't identify with either gender. And you can imagine how much confusion this is going to sow for state correctional officers, for policemen who are trying to check people when they are pulled over. And that's not to mention the fact of Transportation Security Administration. How do you screen someone who does not identify as either a male or a female? It really just opens up Pandora's box and a whole amount of craziness.
I'm thinking XX or XY might be better, but that's just me. You know, that's the genetic thing. For those of you who have taken genetics, you know what that's about. Well, what about Bill 219? What is it? Or is it part of the same thing?
Well, SB 219, it actually is something that we're starting to see, and it plays into this case out of Rockland, California as well. We have been sounding the alarm about this since earlier this year. Sadly, this bill would create not only fines, but even potential jail time if you use the wrong pronoun to refer to someone who identifies as transgender. Now, they're being very cautious and careful. They're starting this by saying, well, this would only apply to nursing homes and old folks facilities, places where senior citizens are living. And look, isn't it more compassionate? If you have an individual in their 70s, 80s, 90s, they identify as transgender, you know, it would be cruel for them to not be treated the way they want to be treated with the pronoun they want. Well, the problem is, if you start there, it does not stop there. And already, before this bill has even been passed, we heard out of that same school in Rockland, like you mentioned at the top of the show, Children are now being told that they could be sent to the principal's office and maybe even suspended if they do not participate in this fallacy, this fraud of calling a child by a different gender pronoun. And that's what happened. As you mentioned, a young girl at the school who knew the student, the male student who now identifies as female, she called him by his old boy name and by he, and she was sent to the principal's office. Essentially, Evan, this is basically coerced speech, and we are now saying that if you do not use the preferred language of the state, we are going to punish you. And right now, it's just being sent to the principal's office, but as I said, at the level of adults and nursing homes, you could actually be facing a $2,500 fine and even up to 6 months in jail for using a biologically correct pronoun if it is not what the person wishes to be known by.
Wow. You know, that's just nuts. Just nuts. Well, what, by the way, we appreciate what your organization is doing and the others that you talked about. What can, you know, everyday parents and Christian leaders do in response to this kind of thing, to kind of to push it back, to hold it back? Because it really is. If you just look at it even halfway quickly, it's nutty. It does not make any sense whatsoever. It's an agenda that's being pushed on us big time. So what would you recommend to our listeners that they might be able to do as Christians?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the first thing I would encourage you to do, you can visit our website, californiafamily.org. This story is the top of our blog website. We have a detailed article including videos, interviews, and ways that you can educate yourself as a parent, that you can begin to protect your parents, protect your children from this confusion that is coming from our culture, from Hollywood and San Francisco and the mainstream media. The other thing I would encourage you to do, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, share the videos and share the stories that we've presented. And we also would encourage you, if you stay informed, we're going to be working with, again, some of our friends at FRC and at Alliance Defending Freedom on some model school board policies. You know, I realize some of your listeners have kids in public school, some are private school, some are homeschool, but this is something that is going to affect everybody, because even if we don't have kids in public school, those kids that are there are eventually going to grow up and graduate and become voters. So it's incumbent upon us to be salt and light. It's up to us to lovingly speak the truth, but boldly speak the truth. And that's
right.
What we're working to do with our friends and allies across the country.
I love that balance, lovingly and boldly. You know, Christ would have us do it that way. And also, you know, you get into a discussion with somebody, Christ would encourage you to be that way and ask questions and then pray for folks as well. Well, very much appreciate you coming on board with us, and you know, God bless your work, Jonathan. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Evan. Appreciate it. God bless you and your listeners.
All right. Thank you. Well, everybody, thanks for listening to this edition of Washington Watch. It's been great having you along. Sorry we didn't have time for any calls. We just had to kind of keep going there with all that information. But look forward to the next time, and God bless you. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening to Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.